From theunce.com, this is The Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. This is the second half of a special two-part episode with Justin Beretta. Beretta is one-third of the Glitch Mob, who we found out yesterday don't produce glitch hop, dubstep, or even bass music. They produce glitch mob music, pure and simple. The Glitch Mob has been a technological and sonic pioneer in the burgeoning West Coast scene, producing high-profile remixes on top of last year's widely successful Drink the Sea debut album. On today's show, Beretta talks about their huge 30-plus date summer tour, which kicks off tomorrow, and features supporting acts like Fantagram, Comtruz, RD, and even RJD2. He also discusses their new EP, which is coming out on July 12th. Today's episode is once again brought to you by Regeneration Festival, presented by Madison House and 1320 Records. It's going down this weekend at Horning's Hideout, just an hour away from Portland, Oregon, and features some of the biggest names in electronic music, including STS9, Lotus, Big Gigantic, Paper Diamond, Elliot Lip, Emancipator, and of course, The Glitch Mob. More information online at regenerationfestival.com. One of the big regen headliners is the man himself, Bass Nectar. Lauren Ashton recently announced that he'll have a new album out on August 2nd, Divergent Spectrum. We're all pretty excited about that. Let's check out a track from his most recent release, Wild Style. From his Wild Style EP. Let's get to the interview with Justin Beretta. You know, when people see you live, it's almost very choreographed, and I imagine that comes out of this sort of matrix of almost duties that everybody has. Do you break it down like, you know, one of you is going to be controlling the drums on this track and the other the bass and the other, you know, vocals and synth patches? Like, do you have to break it down like that, or is it even more complex than that for any given tune?
It's definitely more complex than that, and I think it's interesting because I mean I haven't seen one of our shows, but I would imagine that I'd like to think that it's that the complexity doesn't come through, because we're not really trying to make the behind the scenes web of tech insanity really come through. We just want to be up there playing music, and then you hear the sound and it looks cool and you have fun. So
but
behind the scenes it's incredibly complex, and we spent months actually engineering this. And we spent after our whole year of touring was over and we had some time, we took them about a month of November to re-engineer and really rethink and only spend time just on text shit, to think about the most just useful way that we could use Ableton and really perform this stuff in a way that was really solid, because there's no turnkey way to do this. There's no way to just pick up, because you can go pick up, you can go to a guitar center and buy a guitar and a stomp box, and there you go, like you've got a distorted guitar. But it doesn't work for performing live electronic music. There's
Right.
anyone who's tried it knows that there's lots of old and new technology hooking together, and there's all sorts of really complex things that need to happen to have a, say, like a band play electronic music, and especially the way we do it, where at this point there's no external input coming in. We're all playing all of our pieces out of Ableton. So the cool thing about it is the way it works is we're actually playing this, like the songs you hear, the sounds you hear in the album or in the music are actually the sounds that we're playing live. So it's the exact same thing that you'll hear on the album.
So you've broken down each track and you're reassembling it live in front of people on the fly, essentially.
Exactly, yeah. So that's what's going on. So we've split out all of the bits of the songs and then remapped them in samplers chromatically into Ableton so that we can just replay the sound as if you would just be hearing it on the record. And then we've also added room for improvisation, so I can actually play the melody if I want to exactly how you hear it on the album, or I can riff and I can filter it or add other notes in there too. So it's a huge engineering task, and it ended up being a really fun way for us to perform, and it's a cool way to interact with the crowd. But the other thing is that I think the other part of your question was that the cool thing is that as the song goes on, the role of each person changes, and it's actually a rhythmic performance. Like, we don't actually play melodies in the traditional sense. Like, if there's a chord there, that's three notes, that's all squashed down into one button. So the whole time we're effectively just drumming, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So for one song, like say in Fortune Days, when we start, Josh is playing the drums and he's triggering these tom samples from the computer, and I'm playing the lead melody and Ed is playing the bass, and then boom, as it right as it drops, it changes to something else, and then Ed is playing I think the drums right there, the kick and snare, and then Ed, and then Josh is playing the synth. So as the songs change around, we can just play whatever part we want. So that does shift throughout the song.
And then you actually have brought in real live percussion elements, and they've become a staple in the Glitch Mob show. And that sort of adds an extra element on top of this sort of behind the scenes triggering and this switching roles. Then you actually have this organic drumming element layered further on top of that.
Yeah, definitely. I think the kind of the interesting point about all that was that when we wrote Drink to See, I think it was a pretty big change for us sonically, and we also wanted to perform the music in a different way. And we went out and we just kind of got guitars and drums and a bunch of stuff, and then we realized that that's actually not what we wanted to be doing. It was fun for us because we all liked to play guitar and it was cool, and it was just a big experiment. And, you know, we really just were like, okay, let's see what happens when we bring guitars. And then we were like, you know, I don't know if we really need the guitars up there. That's just not where we wanted to go with it. So yeah, I mean, and the funny part though is that we really liked the drums though. So when we kind of just like throw out the net, see what happens, and pull back in, we're like, wow, hitting stuff with drumsticks is really cool. And it adds a really cool kind of kinetic energy to the show. So we stuck with that. We got rid of the guitars and left that in the show because it's a really fun thing for us to do. I mean, Josh has actually been drumming in bands for a long time, and it's been fun for me. I've taken drum lessons and learned how to do this whole thing too. So it adds a cool element to things, and I think it also makes it more fun for us and for people to see, as opposed to us hitting a button on a touchscreen and hearing a drum sample to actually just hit an electronic drum and have it trigger the sample.
Sure, and then you know you see you guys in your matching outfits, and the lights are going with it, and you're drumming away like some sort of mescaline infused blue man group.
Totally.
We'll be right back. Fortune Days from the Glitch Mob's debut album, Drink the Sea. You guys are truly producers in the sense that you perform almost entirely your own music or remixes that you yourself have produced. Is it because your sound is so distinct that mixing anything else into the set is too drastic of a change that's not even identifiable as Glitch Mob music? Or because of the way that you play and the way that you operate in the live setting that it's just, it would be, well, I guess practically impossible to play somebody else's music because you don't have all the little bits and pieces.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all that stuff, really. I mean, you nailed it with that. I mean, the way we perform now, we can't play other people's music. But at the same time, I think if we really wanted to, we could figure out a way to do it somehow. But really, we have very purposefully just stepped out of the DJ realm and want to be performing songs that we have written and be more of like a live electronic band of hybrid of sorts, just again is kind of off doing our own weird thing, because we had spent a lot of time DJing, you know, I mean not that long, I guess, in the grand scheme of things, but we had started off spinning records and then we were laptop DJs and then Glitch Mob was DJing, and we just wanted to just be a group that just kind of takes you on a journey that's all really we have full creative control over. We're only playing our own music and other people's music doesn't really factor into it. So I think that was just kind of a natural progression for us creatively, where we've really just felt most comfortable.
On that same sort of tip, I saw you earlier this year with Steve Aoki at the Congress Theater in Chicago. On a date like that, where you're the opening act for a DJ that's all hype, either this raging electro that's 40 to 50 BPMs faster than the stuff you're playing, or this really in-your-face dubstep, is there a different game plan or approach you take? Do you feel the need to compensate in one direction or another?
Yeah, I mean, we have different sets that we plan out, and because the way the set is really modular, we can craft a set for a specific night and for a specific time. But yeah, I mean, right now, you know, we're heading out to tour. We have, I think, like 5 or 6 sets or so that we can rotate throughout, and we've got a couple that will play on headlining shows, so if people want to come to different shows, they'll hear different things. And then we're playing some festivals. We're playing in Lollapalooza or whatever, and that's the festival side is different. So there's definitely, when we do that, we have the high energy songs are put together in a way that is meant to really rock a crowd, and it's not as much of an introspective thing. But on the headlining shows, that it's just our own thing at a theater, then we can be more introspective, and there can be bigger peaks and valleys in the energy levels.
So yeah, let's talk about that tour. You're talking about maybe making adjustments even based on the physical venue. So you're hitting like clubs in Asheville and theaters in Cincy and Albuquerque and Orlando. And then you've got those huge outdoor amphitheater shows with like your Red Rock show. So you're thinking not only of where you are playing, whether you're a headliner or not, but also the physical space that you're playing in?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we have a specific set that we're going to play at Red Rocks just for that night. And we have different sets for, yeah, Lollapalooza and Electric Daisy Carnival and different theaters and stuff. So, yeah, it definitely matters where we are. I feel like the goal for us, really, all of this, is we really are just trying to put on a show where people can come and hear the music and you know, dance or just listen and get taken away to a different place and taken on a journey for that period of time, and the setting definitely factors into it. So we spend a lot of time crafting these sets. A lot of many hours goes into thinking about the way that these are going to be consumed by people.
We're going to briefly step away from the Glitch Mob. My guest next week is 18-year-old electro house producer Porter Robinson. He's on tour now with Skrillex and Zett. Let's check him out. We'll be right back.
fire. Take through the wire. I need to stop dropping rope cause I'm on fire.
House, Porter Robinson with I'm on Fire. He'll be on the podcast next week. Let's get back to Beretta. What can fans expect from your openers? You've got a few dates with your buddy RD, as well as Calm Truths and Fanagram, and you've even got a couple of dates in there with a friend of the show, RJD2.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is a time in which is really... It's just so cool for us because we're big music fans. At the base of all this, we're just music geeks, and to get to go out on tour and say, hey, we like reach out to our friends like Fanagram or I mean, Calm Truths, Seth, I had never known before this whole thing. I just actually saw a Vimeo thing of his online, and I was like, wow, this is really fucking cool. I love this. I wonder if he would want to come on tour with us. And wrote into me an email, and sure enough, he's releasing an album. He wanted to come on tour, and it all just really comes from the fact that we really love all these people. I mean, RJD2, I mean, I still listen to Dead Ringer. I mean, I would say at least weekly. And it's just a true honor to get to play music with these people. And I think that it's also an interesting thing too, where you get to mix fan bases in a way where I think I would like to think that maybe someone's a fan of RJD2 and they want to come out to the show and they'd never heard of us before. Hopefully they would like it, or maybe not. But I think that's a cool thing where we can just cross-pollinate all this different stuff. And I really think that our fans are going to love Calm Truths more than anything. Our people who like us, I really think are going to like Fanagram, just because we feel so passionately that we like all these people and RD that we're just putting our stamp of approval on. I think that this is awesome music and hope you like it.
I'm glad you mentioned your fans, because you are absolutely super connected with your fan base. You're calling them out for your latest video that you're shooting in LA. You've got contests to design your tour merch. And there was the big remix contest, which popped up hundreds of Drive It Like You Stole It remixes. The contest eventually won by a friend of the show, Mind Elixir. Has that sort of outreach always been a priority for you?
You know, so that's a good question. I think it has to a certain extent. Of just, it's really natural for us, because we are such tech heads, that it's just, for me, I mean, I actually personally do a lot of the outreach to fans online, and I answer Facebook messages personally, and every single Twitter message for the most part, I answer if I'm not like on an airplane flying somewhere.
And it's
crazy.
Dangerous to do it.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just something that, I mean, for me, I distinctly remember so many times going to a show and just thinking, wow, I just really want to go up to this person I'm seeing perform right now and get to talk to them, interact with them. And it was impossible before the internet. I mean, maybe you could write him a fan mail and, I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, you knew that would never get to him. Maybe you could hang out after the show and say what's up to him really quickly. So I think it's a really cool thing. I think connectivity and the ability to communicate with people is a really powerful thing, and I take that seriously, and we all do too. And for me, it's just like, it's a no-brainer that if people want to write us and say something, why not write back all the time? And I genuinely love talking to people and meeting new people, and also just talking to people after the shows and everything like that. So, I mean, to me, it's still totally manageable. I mean, I'll get up in the morning and, you know, answer emails, and before we hit the studio, spend half an hour answering everyone on Facebook and Twitter. And it's an honor to get to talk to people and meet people like that. And I mean, there's lots of cool stuff has come from it too. So we're super open. I mean, if someone writes us and they say, "Hey, I have an idea for something," a lot of the times it'll turn into something. So that's actually one of the really cool parts of the whole thing for us.
Mind Elixir won the Drive It Like You Stole It remix contest with that track right there. Let's finish up the interview with Justin Beretta. We got to talk about the new EP. The word is that there's three songs, okay, and this is we got a tentative release date somewhere in mid-July.
Correct. Yeah, this is it's a new three-song EP, and we tried some new techniques, and I think that we had a lot of fun writing these songs, and I think that they're going to be really fun to perform live. We're going to be playing all three of them in their entirety, the live set on this tour, and it's going to come out sometime mid-tour. So yeah, they're fun songs. We love them, and I think people are gonna like them. But yeah, we'll see. You never know.
Was there a conscious decision made by all parties to aim for a certain sound or break away from expectations, or was it just a matter of, hey guys, I got this new material, let's work on it, see what happens? What's the motivation here?
Well, I think the definitely the motivation comes in different parts. But with Drink the Sea, when we wrote that was really just an outpouring of what was going on in our heads, and it was very just kind of like stream of consciousness and introspective record. And with this, we really took what we learned there, and we took what we learned from touring that record for a year, and we were a little more intentional, where we made the song structures in a way that were, I'd say, just a little more little more traditional and kind of more what you'd expect from us, but also with some other things that we learned from Drink the Sea. So, you know, I don't want to talk about it too much because it's so hard to describe and describe the music. But I think that we really wrote music to go out and tour this also because we'd spent so much time on stage. So this stuff is really meant to be experienced live, and it's you know, there's energy in the music. It's high octane, and we have designed a whole new visual show to go along with this, and it's all going to be kind of part of this whole thing with the music video. So it's going to be a full spectrum experience.
Well, we're absolutely looking forward to hearing the new material and seeing you guys on the 30 plus date summer tour. Justin Beretta, thanks so much for being on the UNS podcast.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for the UNS podcast interview with Justin Beretta. Special thanks go to Susie Zimmerman with Magnum PR and the Muse Box, and of course, my guest, Beretta. We're listening to RD's remix of Starve the Ego, Feed the Soul. He'll be joining the Glitch Mob for a string of dates on their 30-plus stop summer tour, which kicks off tomorrow at Regeneration Festival, alongside STS9, Bass Nectar, Lotus, the Polish Ambassador, the Great Mundane, Tycho, Little People, Eskimo, and a slew of others. The festival's taking place at beautiful Hornings Hideout, less than an hour away from Portland, Oregon. Please visit regenerationfestival.com for tickets and more information. Coming up next week on the program, Electro House Wunderkind Porter Robinson will be my guest, followed by Rising Livetronica act Zugma the week after that. Porter Robinson is currently on tour with Zedd and Skrillex, and you can catch him at this weekend's Electric Daisy Carnival in Vegas. Find Zugma in a couple of weeks at Camp Bisco 10, followed by The Big Up at the end of July and Papadozio's Rootwire in August. Tell us who you want to hear on the show, and let me know if you've got questions for Zugma by hitting up at the UNS Podcast on Twitter. On the UNS.com contest front, we got a brand new cut copy contest to go along with the two Glitch Mob ticket giveaways. Remember, we've got pairs of festival passes for North Coast, Liberate in Vermont, Camp Barefoot in West Virginia, Resurgence, Recreation, and Underground Sound. All you have to do is visit the UNS.com, sign up, click on contests, figure out which show or shows you want to attend for free, and then press the enter button. Super simple. Please visit the UNS.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review. Tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, you'd like to be a guest on the UNS podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode, contact me at anand@theuns.com. That's A-N-A-N-D @theuns.com. We'll catch you next week.